It is Tuesday, November 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, American voters go to the polls for the midterm elections. French police arrest six people they say were planning a violent attack on French President Emmanuel Macron. And Detroit, Michigan makes the legacy of Motown part of its revival effort. It's all ahead. U.S. voters are participating Tuesday in the midterm elections. All 435 seats in the House of Representatives are at stake on Tuesday, plus 35 of the 100 U.S. Senate seats and 36 of the 50 state governorships. I'm joined by VOA's Steve Reddish. Steve, is this election a referendum on President Donald Trump's presidency?
He's made it that way. He's said those words, make believe that I am on the ballot. He has made it a referendum on himself, but midterms, for the most part, are a referendum on the president who was just elected or reelected. And historically, the president who has been reelected, usually loses seats in Congress. That party usually loses seats in Congress at the midterm elections because it is a referendum on whether or not you've got any regrets for voting for or against that president.
Well, certainly this year we've seen Trump has had so many rallies. He's gone all over the country to speak to voters.
He has. He's made in the last 10 days, he has been at a rally every day, at least one rally. Yesterday it was three rallies to close out the election. He has raised the issues that he believes that will get out his supporters, and that is basically immigration and tax cuts. And that's what he is using to try and get out his base so that the Republicans can win.
What is the likelihood that either the U.S. Senate or the House of Representatives will switch to Democratic control?
All of the pundits and the polls and the people who speak about this are putting the odds on a Democratic takeover of the Senate as likely. Of the House of Representatives as likely. The Senate less likely to unlikely. Democrats have to defend many seats in the Senate, and 10 of those seats are in states that President Trump has won. The House, however, there have been many Republican House members who have retired over the last year, many vacant seats, and as I've said before, history will show that many House seats will flip in the midterm elections.
What will the role of women voters, how is that seen in this particular election?
Women voters are seen as the key to this election. There are more women more women registered to vote in the United States than there are men. Women vote more as a gender, as a percentage of their gender, vote more than men. So women voters are seen as the key to the Democrats to retake the House. They have many women candidates, and they've tried to energize that base by appealing to health care and women's reproductive rights.
And I have seen polls that indicate that women voters, many of them, are taking a more negative view on Trump's presidency.
The polls that I have seen show that there's basically a 60-40 split between men and women. 60% of women are voting for Democrats, while 60% of men are voting for Republicans.
Now, you indicated earlier that immigration has been certainly a cornerstone of Trump's campaigning. Why has that been such a key issue this year?
It's been about 30 years since the last the immigration laws were last revised by Congress. So we're operating in the last 30 years, and you look at the evolution of how people have migrated and what has happened to this country and the world in the last 30 years, and we're operating with rules that are 30 years old. So no one in Congress really wants to be able to, Congress has not been able to tackle the immigration issues. President Trump saw that as a an issue that he could run and win on by trying to limit immigration as a way to save American jobs and make America great again. He used that time and time again, and he's been using it this year to try and get his base, the people who voted for him in 2016, to come out and vote again for Republicans in 2018.
Trump has been very critical of the media, of the news media, and he's talked a lot about fake news. What kind of a role could that play in this particular election?
I think that the consistent painting of the news media as fake news in the United States has done, and it has seeped around the world, has done damage to the credibility of journalists and the credibility of news organizations, and it's put doubt in the minds of voters. When they hear it constantly, when they hear it from someone who they believe in, and when I've been reading many, many stories about Trump voters and how one quote from a New York Times story, I don't know if he's telling the truth, but I can trust him, is what one voter said about Donald Trump. And that's what he is trying. He's trying to get them to come out and vote for him.
Looking back at the polling back in 2016, most of those polls were wrong.
Right.
So going into this election, it's you never know what could happen.
You never know what could happen. The polling error in the 2016 election was about 2%. So if you look at 2% either way, it could mean a tightening of the race, or it could mean a blowout for either party.
All right. Thanks very much, Steve. My thanks to VOA's Steve Reddish. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. Four former leaders in Madagascar are competing for the country's presidency. The U.S. mail bomb suspect, Cesar Sayoc, will appear in a court hearing later today. Afghanistan opens its air trade corridor with China, and the U.N. says 200 mass graves of Islamic State victims have been found in Iraq. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
In a minute.
The authors of a new study published in the American Journal of Public Health have set out to dispel what they call myths surrounding other recent studies that suggest sitting for long periods of time now provides the same health risks as smoking. While study authors say they do agree that excessive sitting, roughly more than 8 hours a day, can increase the risk of premature death and some chronic diseases by 10 to 20%, it doesn't even come close to the hazards associated with smoking. The new study proposes that there is an approximately 180% increased risk of death of any cause from smoking. Terry Boyle, an epidemiologist from the University of South Australia and one of the study's authors, says the simple fact is smoking is one of the greatest public health disasters of the past century. Sitting is not, and you really can't compare the two. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at the legacy of Motown on its home city of Detroit, Michigan. French police on Tuesday arrested five men and a woman, all from the far right, suspected of plotting to attack French President Emmanuel Macron. The source said France's domestic spy agency ordered the raids in three different regions after obtaining intelligence that raised suspicion of an imprecise and loosely formed plan for violent action against the president. Police sources said the six were members of the radical far right in France. It was not immediately clear what the connection between those arrested was. Sajjan Gohel is International Security Director with the Asia-Pacific Foundation in London. He talked with me about the security situation in France as the country prepares for ceremonies commemorating the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I.
Well, certainly the security apparatus in France has been already elevated because of the fact that there is an important event to commemorate the anniversary of the First World War. Ending is approaching. The security had already also been raised following the Paris attacks in November 2015. So France has always been on a high state of alert since then. What we are seeing now is a potential evolving threat where it's not just from jihadist extremists, but also potentially from people of the far right. We've seen more plots involving the far right, not just in Europe, but also in North America over the last year.
What are the reasons for this?
Well, one of the problems was the fact that the far right exploited the political vacuum that was existing in a lot of countries. There has been a degree of a lack of understanding over the social tensions that have existed inside various countries. One of the bigger problems was Angela Merkel's policy to let in over 1 million people, ostensibly from Syria, possibly from other countries, which was then exploited by other groups for their own political agendas. So there is, unfortunately, a polarization that's taking place. There is a big split taking place also between the left and the right, and in that vacuum, you have extremist elements that are exploiting that for their own nefarious purposes.
And why would Macron be a target of the far right?
Well, Emmanuel Macron is seen as a moderate. He is seen as an individual that actually straddles both the liberal and conservative side. Some incorrectly portray him as a liberal candidate, but there are many of his policies that are quite conservative. But for the far right, if you do not believe in their own a very warped agenda, then anybody who they feel stands in their way is effectively a liberal that they need to challenge and oppose.
And apparently last year, a right-wing activist was arrested just before the July 14th, I assume it's Bastille Day parade. He had intended to kill Macron.
Well, one of the problems within France has been the fact that the country faces various threats. In the past, it had been from jihadists that had come from Algeria following the civil war there. There was also the Basque separatist group ETA, which operated in the south of the country. And then increasingly over the last few years, France has had a very large number of foreign terrorist fighters that went to join ISIS, and some of whom came back. And within that problem and that security vacuum that was created, the far right also began to emerge. And wherever there is a jihadist presence, unfortunately, there also seems to be a far right presence that feeds off the fact that there are these jihadists that are potentially carrying out attacks. So there's this kind of very strange cycle where the far right and the jihadists tend to grow in the same vicinity and also use their own propaganda to attack each other.
Sajjan Gohel, International Security Director with the Asia-Pacific Foundation in London. Dozens of world leaders gather in Paris Sunday to mark the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I, and the four-year conflict from 1914 to 1918 left millions dead, wounded, widowed, and orphaned. The scale of the carnage involved no fewer than six empires and colonial powers, including Austria-Hungary, Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and the Ottoman Empire. A dozen nations were drawn into the so-called War to End All Wars in 1914, along with Italy in 1915 and the U.S. in 1970. World War I ushered in new technologies, gave impetus to the rise of communism, introduced poison gas on a large scale, and redrew the map of Europe. The guns fell silent in an armistice on November 11, 1918, 100 years ago Sunday. The Treaty of Versailles in 1920 officially ended hostilities. While events marking the centenary are being held in both London and Paris, no major events were planned in Germany, which suffered millions of casualties. Chancellor Angela Merkel will be on French soil, while President Frank-Walter Steinmeier will be in London. Stephen Van Evra is a political science professor at MIT University in Cambridge, Massachusetts. He tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, quite a miracle has been achieved in Europe since the end of both world wars in 1945.
War has become unthinkable in a place where blood used to flow in rivers. War is now really essentially impossible among the major European states, and people take that for granted. But the achievement's quite amazing. People should learn from it. And a major reason why war has become unthinkable is because the European understanding of history has changed in a very good way. Europeans used to each taught their own chauvinistic, mythical version of history that gloried themselves and blamed others for all of the world's troubles and all past conflicts. And since World War II, that's all been changed, and Europeans now basically all agree, not totally, but overall, on who was responsible for past conflicts, including who was responsible for World War I. And this has greatly calmed everybody's sense of grievance against one another and suspicion and entitlement. And it's been a fundamental reason why Europe is now so deeply at peace. And the people who get the biggest credit for this are the Germans. Inside Germany, there's been a truth-telling movement that's really been working since the 60s, and especially the 70s, at inculcating German society with a, shall we say, honest version of the origins of World War I and World War II and the Holocaust. And the Germans really now lead the world as, shall we say, a truth-telling nation, a nation whose culture is dedicated to not fudging the ugly past, but telling the truth even on one's own wrongdoings. And this has just changed European politics much for the better. In my view, the greatest ungiven but deserved Nobel Peace Prize should go to the truth tellers of Germany, the historians and school teachers.
Can World War I happen again?
No. And that's one of the key reasons. It can't for several reasons, but a big one, maybe the biggest, is that the nationalistic history that fired up Europe for World War I has now been, you know, put in the grave by this commonization of history understanding in Europe. There's several other reasons, too. The American police presence in Europe, the integration of the economies, the democratization of Europe, those are several other things. But I think this history story is the biggest one, and it gets the least attention.
What did we learn from the First World War?
Another warning to draw from the war is the danger of what people then called militarism, by which they meant the undue influence of professional militaries over civilian perceptions about foreign policy and security. One of the root causes of the war was the undue influence of the German military over German civilians, over the way they thought and the way they perceived things. And their influence was very pernicious. They basically inculcated Germany with a social Darwinist view of world politics in which countries had to grow or die. And if you didn't attack your neighbors now, they might attack you later, so you better attack them now. And they also inculcated society with a really, truly bizarre image of the nature of warfare, painting warfare as a positive exercise, over in a hurry, short, wars will be short, wars will be quite cheap and fairly bloodless and almost uplifting and enjoyable, which starts, you know, hard to believe. But this was the common image of war before 1914. The warning here is you don't want to have, shall we say, any national security institutions sort of dominating how everybody thinks. The country that sort of it looks like Germany today is Pakistan, and I think Pakistan really is, in my view, the most dangerous country in the world. And one reason why it's so dangerous is because it's really it's a rebirth of Wilhelmine Germany in the way that the military dominate Pakistan, and they've led Pakistan into very dangerous ideas about foreign policy.
Stephen Van Evra of MIT University. He likens World War I to a boulder tumbling downhill, creating an even larger landslide. Van Evra said the First World War and the Treaty of Versailles left Germans bitter and paved the way for the Second World War. He said had there been no First War, there would have been no Second, no Hitler, and no Holocaust, perhaps even avoiding the rise of communism, the Cold War, and related conflicts like Korea and Vietnam. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
This is International Edition. January will mark the 60th anniversary of the founding of Motown Records, which became world famous for its distinct sound and star performers such as Michael Jackson, Diana Ross, Marvin Gaye, and numerous others. The Detroit-based company was topping the record charts during the 1960s, and its success continued after a move from Detroit to Los Angeles a little over a decade later. Motown Records was sold in 1994 and now operates under a parent company. But its name has become a symbol of an important era in American music. VOA's Lattice Hoke reports on Detroit's efforts to build its legacy as a Motown city.
Detroit is making efforts to recover from years of economic decline, and reminding people of the city's music heritage is a large part of it. Detroit's main library provides space for local musicians to breathe new life into half-a-century-old Motown classics. Abdul Duke Fakir is an original member of the Four Tops.
There's got to be some kind of way that the Motown story and music can stay alive in Detroit. I mean, we were just as important to Detroit as cars.
One of the leaders of the crusade to revive the Motown genre, a blend of soul and pop, is singer Joan Belgrave, the widow of star trumpet player Marcus Belgrave.
There's no place that's dedicated to that genre, and this is Detroit, and people are shocked, honestly.
The Motown Museum in Detroit displays photographs from the company's golden era and is planning a major expansion. Some of the city's streets are getting named after famous Motown stars, such as Michael Jackson. And there is an effort to build a nightclub industry centered around the Motown sound. One of the company's greatest stars was Washington-born Marvin Gaye. His fans say his music resonates today as much as it did 40 years ago.
The more spiritual part of Marvin is that which I've clung to the most, what's going on, inner city blues. So as I'm listening to the song right now, I'm thinking about all the things that's happening in the world, that's happening in this country right now. And he was talking about it then, and it's relevant now.
When Berry Gordy founded Motown Records in January of 1959, he had no idea that he would become a celebrity himself. His autobiography was the basis for Motown the Musical that hit Broadway in 2013 and London 2 years later.
I wanted to tell the story of what Motown was all about. Yeah. I wanted to tell the story of how it felt, you know, the wins and the losses and triumphs and the disasters that happened along the way, and how it was that I happened to come up with it.
The West End musical is currently on a year-long tour of Britain and Ireland. Gordy says he set out to make good music, not just for black people, but for the whole world. Detroit wants to remind the world where it all started. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Zlatica. Well, British actor Idris Elba has been named the sexiest man alive by U.S.-based People magazine. Elba was revealed as this year's winner Monday night on The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon. Elba tells the magazine in an article due out this week, the honor came as a surprise and gave him an ego boost. The 46-year-old actor proposed to model Sabrina Dwyer earlier this year, and congratulations to him. Well, that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.